This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
Ryan, I am really excited today because not only do we have a special guest today, we had this special situation. This year, Toastmasters had their first virtual international convention.
Yes, and that means the World Championship of Public Speaking, which is usually done in a large ballroom on a stage, was also done virtually. And our guest today is the brand new World Champion of Public Speaking. His name is Mike Carr. He comes from Austin, Texas. He's a financial analyst. And on Saturday, August 29th, Mike competed alongside seven other finalists. As we said, he emerged as the 2020 World Champion of Public Speaking from Austin, Texas, representing District 55 and Austin Toastmasters. Mike Carr, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Hey, thank you guys. Oh, it's great to be with you. I appreciate your inviting me.
Well, welcome, Mike. And of course, we're going to be talking about the virtual aspects of the speech competition and the convention. But first, a little bit about you. What got you into joining the Toastmasters fold and how long have you been competing?
Oh, goodness. That goes back 25 years, maybe a little bit more. What caused me to join the Toastmasters fold was I'd come out of college. I worked in politics for a little while, but then I transitioned over to starting a financial management practice. I had a good friend. He gave me some hard words, some hard things to hear, but he really had my best interest at heart. He said, you know, you say ah or or so or and or something like that. It seems like every other word, and you tend to go off on these tangents. You get far way off of the original point you were making, or you don't come back around to answer the question. It's going to be hard for you to grow a financial practice if you're not communicating very well. You might go try a Toastmasters club. I dropped in. I saw the kind of feedback that was being given. There was this great speaker. He was a professional speaker at the time. He had been to the World Championship of Public Speaking three times. He videotaped every one of his speeches, and he suggested that. I learned so much coming out of that. So that was 25 years ago. Then I heard they had a speech contest. I thought, oh, that sounds like that's a lot of fun. So I decided to drop my hat in that first contest. Just kept losing until I didn't.
You never gave up. Of course, you probably had to call it in with only 5 to 7 minutes. There's just no way you could stray.
Right. It was a great constraint. That's one of the things that I've seen throughout my view of art. You know, it's like Shakespeare sonnets. Part of the thing that makes them so great is they have these constraints around them, the iambic pentameter and other things. 5 to 7 minutes makes you really focus into a message. And if you want to do anything artistic, it has to be put in those constraints. So it was a great help.
That's great. Mike, in addition to the learning laboratory of the Toastmasters Club, you also entered the dojo of competitive speaking, and I'm curious how both of those experiences have helped you in the course of your career over the past 25 or so years.
The club experience, and I talk about this a lot, in our club, in Austin Toastmasters, we have a lot of entrepreneurs, tech entrepreneurs, a lot of grad students who are getting degrees in very technical fields. And they've been told or they've discovered that in order to be able to do anything of substance in the world, they're going to have to communicate these very technical ideas in a more cohesive way. And that was who I was 25 years ago. And we say to them, you want to fail here in the club, not in front of the board of directors, not in front of a pitch to investors. That's drawn straight out of my own experience. I'd been doing table topics for about 2 or 3 years when I went back into my office. My phone was ringing. I picked it up. It was my largest client calling to fire me. Ooh. And I was at a point in my career that would have devastated my business. It probably would have knocked me out of the industry. But I've been doing table topics for about 2 or 3 years. Thankfully, I immediately stood up, I looked up, and just like in a table topic practice, the mental outline immediately showed up on the left side of my visual. I could see it. And instead of just meandering all over the place, I started asking him questions. I started going down the outline. And that day, he didn't fire me. We had a meeting. We went through his concerns. I was able to retain that client. So a very tangible way Toastmasters helped my business, allowed me to stay in that business. What I did pretty soon after that is rather than cold calling or selling, I started doing financial seminars, financial education seminars, and that caused me to grow. That helped me grow my first business.
Awesome.
You get a lot of great feedback in a Toastmaster club, but once you win a club contest, every level you win, all of a sudden you represent that group of people, where in the club they might come out and say, you know, you did this well, you did that well, and you know, you might think about doing this. If you're representing them at the next level of contest, you get the most straightforward, unfettered feedback. They'll come in and go, yeah, this and this were good, but you really need to change that. This didn't work. This piece didn't work at all. You want to think about that. It's not harsh. I've never seen speeches improve as much as the speeches that I carry through a contest cycle. And that has become actually more valuable than the result of any contest.
Wow. Mike, I'd like to ask a little bit about the logistics of this virtual contest. From the audience perspective, other than the fact that it was online and people were speaking, presenting from their home environment, everything was pretty seamless. We had the contest chair introducing each of the speakers, a clean segue right into each speaker, the 1 minute of silence in between for the judges to complete their ballots and whatnot. But I wonder, and I think our listeners might be wondering as well, those who've watched the contest video, did it all happen live in real time, or were the presentations pre-recorded? And if so, what was that like?
It's a great question. It really informed the message of that final speech, or the speech that I gave in the finals, because Toastmasters as an organization was innovating on the fly. They were building the plane as it was taking off. The contest started live, just like any other contest cycle. The area contest was the last one that was live. By the time the division came, the world was locking down. Toastmasters broadly was moving to virtual. And so the first, in at least our division, at that round of contests, they were doing the contest just in a virtual format with a live audience who was watching in real time. What the risk was actually happened to me in the division contest. We had different people in the audience who were inadvertently turning their microphones on. We actually, right in the middle of my division speech, someone inadvertently shared their screen and spoke. I actually looked away so that it wouldn't be distracting. Enough of that happened where when we went to the district and then the region, Toastmasters International was saying, how do we provide an actual credible contest that has a live feeling, but doesn't have the risk of one of the 20,000 people watching, sharing their screen, turning on their microphones? So they said, we can't have it actually live because we'll have technical issues, different people from around the world. What they did was they put a date on the calendar. In the instance of the final, it was 2 days ahead of time. In the instance of the semifinals, it was a week to 2 weeks ahead of time.
Okay.
They just ran it exactly like a regular contest, but the only people that were on Zoom during that time were the contestants, the judges, who we never saw. They could see us, but we never knew how many were there or who they were there, and the MC or the Toastmaster of the contest. Those were the only people there. But then it ran just like a regular contest. We had a briefing ahead of time. They said, all this is going to happen. They started. It was one take. The only exception would have been if there was a technical failure. Other than that, the contest ran like a regular contest would. It was just recorded, and the only audience were the judges, whom we never saw. So a minute between each speaker. And then there were 5 minutes of silence at the end where the judges judged in real time, handed in their ballots. That was the crazy part. There was a week time period. And then the final, there was a 2-day time period where we all knew, somebody knew who won and who didn't win. That was almost the most crazy part. That was psychologically so difficult to live very presently and to, I'm a big one to believe, focus on the things you can control, ignore the things you cannot control. And it was a great discipline in those 2 days between when the final was recorded and when it streamed to say, I know somebody went out there, but it's already decided that's outside of my control. Just don't worry about it.
It sounds very much like a game show, right? The game shows, or even you take something like Jeopardy, where it was probably recorded 3 or 4 or even 6 months previously.
Right.
Somebody knows, obviously nobody's speaking.
Right.
I know it was challenging just waiting, but how hard was it to perform without having this live crowd, right? You're not having any energy or feedback from the audience, except for those judges who you said you knew were peering in at you.
Right.
What was that like?
That was challenging. I had to spend some time in rehearsal and certainly leading up to my actual speech time, getting my head around, putting myself in front of an imaginary audience. I was imagining an audience behind that camera. And so the logistics of it was, I started out imagining our Austin Toastmaster group is a relatively large club. It has anywhere from 30 to 50 in the room each time we're there. And we haven't been together for obviously, 6 months or so, but I started out imagining giving this speech to that group. And then there would be points in time in the speech where I really wanted to connect with each member of the audience individually. And so I would mentally imagine a certain individual that I was speaking directly to at different times. For example, I've said the phrase to one of my daughters many, many times, "Look, honey, the victory is not in the results. The victory is in the try." Whenever she was wanting to go take a test and she was so nervous about it, or wanting to go to a job interview, and it really was racking her up with nerves, I said that phrase to her that I heard from Mrs. Montgomery years and years ago. And so whenever I said that, I put her face in my imagination right behind the camera. So I'm looking right at my daughter, Macy, and I'm saying, the victory is not in the results, it's in the try. And then would go back to the audience at bigger, more cartoony or humorous times. So I tried to play that mental game to give the feel that I was speaking to a bigger audience and then individuals. And hopefully it came across. But that was my attempt trying to make the connection.
That's really fascinating. I'm curious, in your practice, Mike, were you visiting virtual clubs, or were you doing what you just described, the way you delivered the speech, and doing it alone in a bedroom or wherever you happen to be?
It was a little of both. I started out doing the speech in the mirror because, the difference, you all know, having been to, once you get to district and beyond, then those stages are large. The skill set is different in projecting to a big room, where in this environment, you can truly be intimate with every member of the audience, which is a blessing and a curse. I chose to really hope to look at the blessing. And so I started looking and doing the speech in the mirror because I wanted to be able to glance over and see, every audience member is going to be able to see every little nuance change in the look on my face. And I could communicate that way where you couldn't necessarily in front of a large audience. So started in the mirror, and then recorded it on camera, did a lot of it against a blank wall, because then I had to imagine the different audiences that I was speaking to at different points in the speech, and then went to various virtual clubs that I trusted, and at the same time looped in a coach and Mark Brown to get levels of feedback. But I got a great piece of feedback in the semifinal. There's a guy, and I've forgotten his name now, but he's an area director in District 55. He happened to be visiting a club of a good friend that I was doing the rehearsal before, And he commented on my semifinal speech, the way I used the camera. And he just said, I just think that's so unique. He said, I would hope that maybe I'd encourage you to do that more. Well, that was the seed that germinated that became the final speech that now everybody says, hey, could you talk about how you did that? And I need to go find him again and say, thank you for giving that piece of feedback, because it really blossomed into something that was bigger.
This is a perfect time to ask you about the speech, about the librarian and Mrs. Montgomery. Tell us a little bit about the backstory.
The backstory, it's a story that I've told to my colleagues, to my kids, to leaders throughout my career, a lot about leaders can, when they run into someone who's taking a risk, they kind of can go one of two ways with it. And I go back and I tell this story that happened to me whenever I was in the sixth grade about, here's one leader, Mrs. Montgomery, who was encouraging of that risk taking, even though it may not work out. And then there was this risk averse leader, who I call Mrs. Landon. That wasn't her real name, but she was the librarian, and very well meaning. She was technically right in the short term. We don't want to take a risk with public property. And at the same time, it so squelched the creativity of a young man. And I carried that with me for a long time, that fear of, oh, I could go try this thing, but ooh, there could be a pinch if the wrong person sees that. So I've told that story in different ways and different aspects of that story for a while. I never really used it in a speech. I just used it as an anecdote.
Part of the reason that this really resonates with me, now, of course, for those who haven't heard the speech, we'll certainly have in the show notes a link to the full speech and, of course, the entire World Champion of Public Speaking. But for me as an individual, it immediately resonated with me. When I was in high school, for 3 years, I was the AV monitor, audio-visual monitor. And so my job was to bring the projectors to the classrooms. And when the teachers were finished, I would pick them up at the end, and then I would do a little maintenance on them, a little fixing here and there. And then one day I inadvertently broke a $300 bulb. It was a projector that was broken that I was trying to fix. And I inadvertently broke this bulb. And I thought, this is it. I'm going to have to give away my entire life savings.
Right. Oh man, so I am you and you are me. In the middle of my speech, were you, did your eyes start twitching? Did you start having tremors, having the PTSD? I'm sorry, my brother. I didn't mean to cause you suffering in the middle of my final speech.
I was reliving it.
Right, but didn't you have that emotion of how do I get away? How do I get out of here?
Disappear.
Oh yeah, man. You were not my favorite person at that moment. Just kidding.
I don't blame you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for the emotion I was creating in you.
It worked though, right?
We are connected in that. Yes.
As it turned out, they were going to have to replace the projector anyway. It would have been nice if they could have saved the bulb, but it turned out okay. And at first I was really nervous, but the moderator, his sort of grin, nasty grin, evil grin, turned into a smile. So it actually worked out okay. And I've lived to tell the tale.
That's great. Oh, that's so funny. I'm so glad. I'm so glad you shared that. Because you know that that part of this conversation is going to go into the longer version of that speech.
Sure. Just credit me.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, you and I can't be the only ones out there, right? There are so many. I keep running into so many people. Now that's the closest experience that another person has had to that same story. But in terms of that emotion, that is universally common, that at a relatively young age, during our formative years, individuals go out and they try something. They try to let some of the magic that the Creator put inside of them, try to let that out. Hopefully they had a Mrs. Montgomery in their lives that said, yes, do more of that. You know, it didn't work, but it'll work next time. But so many of us have had individuals that for whatever well-meaning reason, then step in and kind of smack us a little bit for that. That's tragic, because we all have that magic inside of us. And the more of that that gets out into the world, this world becomes a better place.
So true. That is so true. Yeah.
Well, what I thought was really cool, Mike, is that not only did your message have to do with taking a risk, but you took a big risk. What I mean by that is your camera craft. That's a term I learned in a recent episode that Greg and I did with Kristen Arnold. Stagecraft is what we call it when it's on the stage. When it's in the virtual environment, it's camera craft.
Oh, I love that.
You used the entire stage. You built, so to speak, a larger stage for yourself and used virtually every corner of it. Yeah. Of course, what we were just talking about, the AV equipment, the imitation that you did of the film projector melting down and flickering on the screen and going dark as you presenting yourself as the video on the screen drifting out of the frame. It was all so brilliantly executed, and it was also risky. It could have come off really cheesy. Like you said, you were studying the expressions on your face. The slightest little slip up could have really thrown that off. Did you view that as taking a risk at the time?
I did. I really did. In fact, I woke up Saturday morning, the morning that the contest streamed, just with this grip in my chest. And I told my wife, I said, I blew it. I went too far. I'm really afraid I embarrassed myself.
Like it was too gimmicky or something?
Yes. I thought it's going to come off cartoony. Toastmaster judges are going to hate it, but I think a Toastmaster audience may hate it. Also, it really gripped me with fear to the point that I was supposed to watch the speech with three other speaker friends of mine. They have an outdoor patio that's covered, and so we were able to socially distance, and they had a television set up. I texted them ahead of time, and I said, I just can't show up right at 9 because I'm going to have to fast forward and watch myself to make sure that I didn't embarrass myself. And if I've embarrassed myself, I'm just not going to show up.
Wow.
I was standing in their backyard with my phone behind a tree. Literally, that's how nervous and scared I was about this. And I fast forward and I just watched the speech itself. And I remember saying, thinking to myself, okay, it just doesn't look awful. At least I didn't completely embarrass myself. Toastmaster audience may hate it. It may not work for judges. I knew I wasn't going to win. I knew this was Kwong's year, but at least I don't think I embarrassed myself. That was the first time I had some relief after doing that speech. So I knew it was a risk, but had decided to take the risk because I thought, in this environment, I can do something safe. If I never make it to this stage again, I want to do something that has a piece of art in it, do something that I'm proud of, that I could take that video and maybe go and market to do some additional professional speaking. But at the end of the day, I wanted to play with the medium. I think life's too short to play it safe, even if Toastmaster judges hate it, even if a Toastmaster audience hates it.
I was curious whether or not the speech itself, did you design it initially with these virtual elements in mind, or did that come after? Meaning, would you have delivered perhaps that same speech to a live audience the same way?
No. In fact, actually, my plan was to deliver a different speech. I thought, if I made it to Paris on that big final stage in front of, 3,000 people?
Yeah.
I had a completely different speech that used the entire live stage. I would be back and forth, up and back, trying to use the entire live stage. And I hope I get an opportunity to give that speech somewhere in the future, because I loved that speech. Talked about my daughter and talked about, some similar elements. But then I started rehearsing that speech in front of the camera. One of the things that I recommend that people do is they record themselves and watch it with the sound off. And as I watched it, it was visually boring. I was boring myself. And I thought, if I believe in that speech and I'm boring myself, how's my audience going to feel? 2 or 3 weeks before the final, I said, I've got to scrap that. And I've got to create another speech. I had this story of Mrs. Montgomery in the librarian rolling in the back of my head. And I thought, I've got to scrap that and do something that really focuses, is designed for the virtual stage. I wasn't calling it virtual stage, but designed for the camera. The speech changed completely, and the way the speech was designed for the purpose of trying to make it visually interesting.
Mike, a few minutes ago, as you talked about the risk that you took, the fear and dread that you felt as you awaited the results or awaited your peek at the video to see how it came off, there was something beautiful about your vulnerability in that. And so I just want to acknowledge and thank you for that.
Well, you guys are nice. I do want to say I so appreciate your giving appreciation for vulnerability. I've got a lot of people now who are approaching me almost like, oh, you're now in this rarefied air where you did this thing that, you know, we can't do, I can't do, but how do we get close to that? And I just want to debunk that. I was awful as a speaker starting out, and practice and consistent practice improves everything. There are individuals, and I would say every individual has their approach where they can take their strengths and make it their own. We've got an individual in our club who could barely stand in front of an audience and doesn't have a lot of vocal modulation, but she has trafficked so well on her dry, humorous delivery that she now is one of the most funny speakers when she stands up, and it's just a very straightforward, dry, almost monotone delivery, but she uses that to produce an amazing speech. Everybody can do that. We just get ideas. It's trite to say, look, if I can do it, you can do it. But it really is true.
But isn't that what the Toastmasters experience is all about?
Yeah.
It's about the program. It's about the people. It's about the feedback. It's about the camaraderie to help us take us from a place where we were
right
to boldly go where we've never been before.
Well, I think that can be part of it because the manuals take someone up to there, but we do have a lot of individuals that get to a certain level of skill and then they say, well, I've learned what I can learn from Toastmasters. Then they move on. They leave the club and they go forward. And what I try to say to my professional speaking friends is, look, are you going to try out new material on someone who's paying you? And they across the board say, no, absolutely not. But I go, why aren't you a member of a Toastmaster club where you could get a 10-minute speech and go try out a risky story in front of people that will give you straight feedback? And if it falls flat, you get real-time information. So I think there's a lot of opportunity, especially in this virtual environment where we're now all communicating with our grandparents, with our siblings, with our grandchildren in this way. We have an opportunity in Toastmasters Club weekly to really build rapport and practice that. And it enriches our lives. I cannot understand why the entire world are not Toastmasters right now.
Mike, applying the message of your speech, I think you would agree with me that every Toastmaster who competed in the 2020 World Championship Public Speaking, starting at the club level all the way up to the semifinals and finals, won. As you say, the victory is in the try. And in your case, of course, not only do you have the victory in the try, but you have the victory in the trophy this year. And congratulations for that. And thank you so much for taking the time to join us on the show today.
Oh, it has so been my pleasure. Thank you guys so, so much.
Mike, is there a place if people want to reach you? Obviously, you're easily found on the internet, but if someone wants to connect with you and find out a little bit more about you and what you're doing, what's the best way for them to do that?
I've got a website, mikecarrofficial.com, where they can certainly connect that way. I've got email on there. Yeah, I even have my phone number on there. I'm going to be putting white papers and material on that website. And then really on almost every social media channel, I'm getting ready to start a YouTube channel to talk more about the depth of some of these communication ideas and share there. But I post almost daily. I'm a real beneficiary of good, wise people around me, and I try to share any wisdom that I find.
Beautiful.
Mike Carr, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.